fried egg requires a different technique. What you need to do is actually square the face so it'll dig down underneath that bad lie and propel that ball right out onto the green.
Here's the thing, playing out of a buried lie in a bunker is completely different than playing out of a nice, clean lie in a greenside bunker.
You need to be aggressive on any shot, whether it's sitting cleanly or it's a fried egg.
Well, we've all faced it, the dreaded fried egg. It's not to be feared, though. It's actually a pretty easy shot to hit.
Welcome back to the Explorations Podcast. On this episode, we decided to break up the sound of our voices, rambling on the ins and outs of some of the fabulous golf courses we've played, and brought on two guests. The first is Dr. Joe McGoldrick, who we met by chance at the Harbor Bar our first night in Port Rush. We would meet him there again the next night, same bar, a little later maybe in Port Rush. And he's a distinguished fella with a significant background, traveled all over the world, but keeps coming back to Port Rush, and an amazing storyteller and one-liner wordsmith that kind of charmed us. So we wanted to bring him on, tells a few stories, tells about his history in Port Rush and why he always keeps coming back here and what it means to him. The second guest is Dave Linus, who we met our first morning in Port Stewart at one of the best coffee shops you'll encounter anywhere in the world, Lost and Found, set kind of high above the cliff and looking out over the sea. In Port Stewart, impeccably designed, great food, just amazing vibe that even our most discerning sort of coffee connoisseurs, Cameron and Matt, it sort of hit it out of the park with them. Dave grew up in Port Stewart, was a pioneer, as he'll say, of the surfing culture before it really got big and huge there and more well-known. Dave owns and operates Lost and Found, the coffee shop. So he talks about growing up in Port Stewart, how and why he came back with his family after a lengthy stint in Dublin. And we just thought it would be great to bring in two voices that have a little bit of familiarity, people who've been here more than the several days that we have, and really kind of give you a flavor of who you'll meet, the kind of hospitality and voices you will encounter when you come up to the Causeway Coast. Hope you enjoy it.
I suppose I spent my life giving medical advice. And I don't know what's because my wife, I think, she's not the same as me. She's not as talkative for a start. And I met her on a blind date in London, and she's from South Wales. But she's the university doctor for the University of Leeds. So she's used to talking to young people, making them feel at home. But I wasn't saying it was cramping my style, but there were 16 of us went out one night to the restaurants in the Harbour Bar. And there were a number of notable people there, but we'll perhaps name them later. But including Wilma Erskine, the secretary manager, Wilma's husband, Ross, and we all headed out. And my wife did what she would normally do, which is the nearest young, good-looking lad. She was chatting away to him and asking how he was getting on. And he was clearly interested in golf. Gary McNeil was across the table. Gary's he's the head pro. He's just the most gorgeous lad. He's just the best fun. Alan Dunbar, I'm not sure if Alan was there that night. Alan won the amateur over at St. Andrews, a proper decent golfer. But there was a young sort of, he kind of needed a shave, a bit like Andy over there. He needed a shave, but you know, my wife wondered, could he not afford razor blades? What was the story with him? So she engaged him in conversation. What did you like to do? Do you like football? I like Manchester United. Who do you play golf? He said, I play golf. He said, and what will you do for a living? She said, well, I think I'll play golf. And he said, where will you play it? And he said, well, I'll play it from different places. I'll play maybe professionally. And he said, well, have you got something to fall back on? He said, I have a business degree. And he said, well, that's nice. And she decided that it was good to introduce me to him. And he said, my husband plays golf and you should maybe get a game with him and you maybe play together. And so she reached over and she said, Joe, what was your name? And he said, Graham McDowell. So so my wife's trying to give Graham McDowell advice for his career just after he'd won the US Open in 2010. So Graham, if you're out there listening, don't listen to my wife. I certainly don't. Stay out of trouble, Graham.
All right, we welcome Dr. Joseph, or Joe, McGoldrick to the podcast. Just by way of introduction, we've run into Joe now the last two nights, two out of two nights at the Harbor Bar. He's a man of great distinction, at least in my eyes. He would probably defer on that. But he's got a lot of letters after his name. He's a doctor. He's been around the world. He's got stories for days. I call him sort of a Forrest Gump character. This may make him uncomfortable, but he plays at Royal Port Rush. He's the kind of person you precisely want to run into at the Harbor Bar and start talking to. And we've had the good fortune of doing that two nights in a row. We had to bring you on the podcast. Doc, Joseph, Joe, thank you for joining us.
It's an absolute pleasure. If you're going to meet somebody coming to Portrush, you've got to meet them in one of two places. It's either at Royal Portrush Golf Club or you got to meet them at the Harbor Bar, because it's a good spot, Portrush. It's like a port in a storm. Everybody comes here, everybody lives here. If you've gone away for years and years or you've lived somewhere else, you always end up coming back here. And when you do come back here, sometimes in the middle of winter, the only place opens a Harbor Bar, and that's where we met. Not a bad spot.
Now, as I said in the preface or preamble, you've been everywhere around the world. You've been to the States. You went to school. You studied, taught at Duke.
I did a wee bit. I was very lucky. I studied medicine initially in Northern Ireland. I didn't grow up all of my life in Northern Ireland, and then I just was lucky enough. So I ended up being a heart surgeon, and then I was working in a transplant unit in Cambridge in England at Papworth and the National Heart Hospital in London. So we were a transplant unit. So I got sent by my boss out to work for a chap called David Sabiston at Duke, and he was the chairman and chief at Duke. So I did some research there as a PhD at Duke. Our transplant unit was initially founded by Norman Shumway in Stanford. And then we did some work with a chap called Bruce Wrights, Dr. Bruce Wrights at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. And we did some transplantation there. Just normal stuff.
Just normal stuff. Heart transplant?
That sort of stuff.
Yeah. Duke, Stanford, Hopkins, Cambridge. Sydney, right? You've been to Sydney as well.
Oh, yes. I forgot. So, yeah, I used to be the transplant lead there, and I was a surgeon there. In fact, it was quite tragic, and I've never said this. There was quite a famous guy there called Victor Chang who was killed, and then I was phoned from Sydney, so I joined their unit 48 hours later. So wow. I spent some time there, which it was tragic circumstances. But for me, being Irish, what a great place to go to, Sydney in Australia. And it, you know, I was born to surf, and Australia was the place to surf. I hadn't even started playing golf then, but it was a great country, great people, loved it.
So you've been all around the world. You now live in Leeds. You play a little golf at Elwoodley, I believe.
I do
a little bit.
You must have remembered that. Good. Good.
Well,
club.
We were at the Harbor Bar. Yeah. I try to keep notes even amidst the Guinness. You know,
you're the man.
But you've played a lot of golf. You've traveled all over the world. You've worked at all sorts. What about Portrush? What is it about the town, the city of Portrush, that sort of brings you back? You talked about kind of running the streets as a kid.
It's home. I remember you telling me about Rory, and he was asked, and he said his, one of his first impressions was coming over the hill just at the top of, just up by the Royal Court Hotel, and you look right down onto the cliffs and the beach, and it's like he knew he was coming home. I knew I was coming home when I saw that. You had the whole golf course is laid out in front of you. And I'm one of these people, it wouldn't sound like it, but I get embarrassed easily. And when I come home, I'm embarrassed because I feel like I'm an outsider, and that lasts until the second pint of Guinness at the Harbor Bar, and then you're a local. I mean, you lads are from America, for God's sake, and you were locals after your third pint.
Yeah.
So it's just nice to come home, and you reconnect with yourself. You don't get big-headed and big-legged. When you come home, you're just one of the boys, and it's just fine.
I would say, you know, as we learn more about your distinction and all the, you know, all you've done in the world, just to see you kind of posted up at the Harbor Bar, watching soccer or football, as you would call it, I think.
Yeah.
It's sort of interesting. You might not see people with that kind of life and distinction and travels at such an unassuming place like the Harbor Bar. And it seems to be that's the kind of place that attracts everyone. Or home.
The Harbor Bar is. There was a thing that I liked about the Harbor Bar. Life gets more complicated, and it really should be getting much easier. And it used to be a sign on the bar, and it said, "No Wi-Fi, talk to each other." And yeah. I think that there's a lesson there. And so when you go in there, the first thing you do is you say hello to the guy next to you. You say hello to the barman by that stage you're in. And then we met you lads, a group of Americans come in. Your first word is hello, make sure you guys are comfortable. Do you know where you're eating tonight? Have you got a place to stay? Everybody okay? And then we'll ignore you. You can get on with your drinking after that. So the Harbor Bar is a place where people connect. When I was a kid, it would freeze the nuts off you surfing off the East Strand, and you were lying in the water really, really cold, and you were having a great old time, and you'd come in and you'd go into the harbour bar. You weren't old enough to drink and you didn't have enough money to drink, but the boys in the harbour bar had the fire lit. They would give you hot chocolate, hot coffee. And as you get older, you remember those things and you always come back to them and you always support the same people.
So what are some of your earliest stories, your fondest memories of being younger, running around Port Rush? You said you'd come up here with the boys, you would kind of hop on motorcycles or whatever it may be. What was it about Port Rush that was so fun as a adolescent or a youth?
Well, the biggest skill in Northern Ireland is to stay out of trouble. So if you're coming up here, you came here, it was like, it was like a port in a storm. It was away from, Northern Ireland had its difficult times.
Sure.
Port Rush, to a degree, probably was sheltered from that. Not completely, but mostly. And when you come up here, there's a saying, when you enter the water, you enter the food chain when you go surfing. But the only thing can get you up here is cold. If you're in Australia, you get a shark getting you in the backside, or you're in, I was surfing in Hawaii and this big whale breached and I was in tears. It was the best thing I'd ever seen. But over here, the only thing can happen to you is you'll freeze your nuts off in the water. And one day, while I was freezing my nuts off in the water, I looked up and what I now know to be the fifth green at Royal Port Rush, and it is the prettiest green you have ever seen and the best hole. And I thought, what are those people doing up there? Not least because they were all bent over at an angle of 70 degrees. And I think that was because they were bracing themselves against the wind. I thought they had a spinal abnormality, but it was just the wind. And they were looking down thinking, what is that idiot doing in the water? And I thought precisely the same about them. So that was my first memory of Royal Port Rush Golf Club. I thought, what are you guys doing up there?
So what is the crossover between you? You've now done both. You got into golf late in your life, relatively late. Now you're
late 40s, probably mid 40s, maybe.
A low handicap, pushing straight. You got good quickly, from what I understand.
If you play sport, sport's a doddle. It's easy. You know, one sport's the same as another sport. You play sport.
Soccer, judo. You play a little pretty bit. High level of football.
High level at judo, average at football, but good enough to make a little bit of money, which helped me when I was a medical student. So good enough to play semi-professionally.
So you got into golf eventually. What is the crossover? How often between surf culture and golf culture here? Are they pretty distinct? Are they separate? Do you find many people who do both? It seems to be two of the thriving sort of subcultures in Port Rush, Port Stewart as well. Are there a lot of people who do all of it and do both? Are they kind of going their own ways?
I would think so. I mean, you play golf and you play golf until you're tired and then you come in again and then you have a beer and you think, I'll never play it again, and you go back out the next day. But surfing, you've got to make sure that the wave isn't going to beat you or eat you. So you can only surf for so long, and then you got to take up what I used to think was an old man's game, only to realize that golf isn't an old man's game. I wish to God I'd taken this up when I was a kid, because I'd be as good as him over there or you guys. Yeah, but you know, the crossover's here because it's not a, what's the word? It's not a privilege game here. It's not a posh game. It's not an expensive game. And it's fun. And the guys are competitive here. And in Northern Ireland, I think they're good sports people generally, mostly because the sport's quite cheap to do and it's easy to do. And it's not a very, very wealthy nation, you know. But I think we punch above our weight a wee bit.
Yeah, it sounds like it's cheap to do. It's the opposite in America, right? Basketball thrives because you just need a ball and some blacktop and maybe a hoop. In golf, there's so much accessibility issues, right? And it sounds sort of, in a way, Northern Ireland has that with golf in terms of cost and accessibility.
Yeah, I think people like to see kids playing golf, and you never shoo people off the course. You never shoo a young kid away. A, you don't know who he is. Yeah. And secondly, you want to encourage him. But my youngest lad, the first time he ever hit a golf ball was at Calamity, which is used to be the 14th. It's a tremendous par three, as you know. It's now the 16th. But it was his first ball that he ever hit. And so I teed him up with a little 5-wood halfway around the cliff edge, and he missed the green by a mile. It ran down the hill to a foot. And I thought, oh, please God, let him make the putt. And he did make the putt. And he said, any advice, son? And I said, yeah, give up. It's downhill from here. It's downhill from here. No, there's, I think everybody likes doing sport here. It's a doddle.
Is that one of your fondest memories of Royal Port Rush, where you've played now?
Yeah, it is, because I mean, you guys play golf at a high level. I like to see the person I'm playing with playing well. I don't mind if I win, and I don't mind if I play well. I like them to play well, and if they play well and I beat them, well, that's the way it is. And if you don't, as long as they enjoy it. And all I wanted them to do was enjoy it. Just enjoy it.
How has Irish surf culture kind of blossomed in the way? Like, we know what makes a good golf course, what makes good golf, what makes good surf. You've surfed everywhere in the world. We talked to someone from Port Stewart who yesterday, who talks about, you know, the best surfers in the world are coming to Ireland, international, are traveling here to surf. What makes this such a good spot to surf versus everywhere else you've surfed?
I think consistency. We've got consistent breaks. We've got good beach breaks, good point breaks. We got heavy seas. The sea's coming a long way. It's coming all the way from America before it hits us, and then it just rises up on that West Coast. But it rises up here too. But the other thing we've got here is, I mean, you can properly freeze your nuts off in California. I mean, it must be warmer up in the North Pole than it is in California in the water. However, we get the Gulf Stream, so it's a wee bit warm. We enjoy it. People are now coming over here. Northern Ireland has, I think, tightened its act up a little bit. It realized that, you know, there are better things to do than fight each other. You might as well, you know, play sport a wee bit more hard than causing trouble for each other. So more people then came, more tourists then came. We've gone and surfed all year breaks. The culture amongst surfers is a great one. It's a lovely vibe. It's a sharing vibe. It's a humble vibe. And so they all come to Ireland as well. And there's some proper good surfers around here. And I am most definitely not one of them.
Does it have better golf courses or better surfing
here?
Conditions? Yeah.
Both. Both. I'm biased because it's nice to come home. But the best course I've set foot on earth is Royal Port Rush. I love it. And that's having played the California courses and stuff. And we get the Mackenzie affiliations as well. So those tournaments we'd get over and play in. But I just love it here. And it's just, every day is different. The wind's different. The sun's different. It's just beautiful.
Is there a course out there that you've played that you think closely or most closely approximates Royal Port Rush? You've been to a lot of courses.
Pebble? They're not the same.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of similarities, and it's good when you're playing in a four ball and nobody's watching your ball because they're all looking at the sea.
Right.
And you think, yeah, if you're lucky enough to be by the sea, you're lucky enough.
Yep. Any other great stories from your rounds out at Royal Port Rush? I know you've played there for many years, just with your kids kind of bouncing around.
No, I think there's a whole part of my memory has been blanked out because I remember the introductory rounds at the start of your membership.
Yep.
And you're sitting there thinking, oh God, don't swear, oh swear, don't God. You know, what have I said? I've missed the putt. So no, they've all just been great rounds. But going round after an injury, I ruptured my Achilles recently and I went round with Simon Rankin, who was the captain, who introduced me to the new holes. And I went round with him and I played a great round of golf, only to find out that the guy playing ahead of me, Darren Clark, had reached one of the holes and two, and I'd hit three of my best shots out of the screw to reach the thought. And I thought, I'm definitely giving this up. I'll take up another sport now.
Is there, you said a talent of Northern Irish or Irish is staying out of trouble. Is there a story you can tell on the podcast where you failed to do so, running around Port Rush, where maybe you weren't able to stay out of trouble? One that you can repeat. As a great doctor of great distinction, you're on the record. I don't want to put you in trouble here. I don't want to
It would be...
As a kid running around Port Rush many years ago.
Yeah. I'm hoping that all the police that were around at the time have retired. but it's not a question of staying out of trouble. You have to get into trouble to stay out of trouble. It's important that you get into trouble first. There's no point getting out of trouble if you're not in it. But one of the things we have here is, you might have heard of it, it's the Northwest 200. It's a motorcycle race, and it's one of the fastest road races in the world, along with the TT and the Isle of Man. But when we were medical students, which is 60 miles away, we would come up here at night for a cheeseburger, mostly because we were going stir crazy. And so we would go as fast as we could with our feet on the ground and the steel on the toe caps would put sparks behind us, and then we'd switch the lights off until the police caught us. And then we did the same journey. We did the same journey in daylight one time. And of the three of us that went up, I came round a corner, I think at reasonable speed, and it was the smell that hit me first, because there was cow pats, cow poo everywhere. Yeah. And about 100 yards up the road was about 100 cows. And I was sliding the bike all over the road, and I put it into a hedge. The guy behind me went through the hedge, and the third one was laughing. He stood at the side of the road until the police came, and we were covered in cow poo. But that's probably the least trouble we've ever got into. But it's it just sums it up here. It's important to stay out of trouble, but only after you've got into trouble.
After you got, all right. This is one we've asked several of the Irish. Where's the best Guinness? And is it actually better in Ireland? You've been to the States. You've lived in the States. Is Guinness better in Ireland, in Northern Ireland, than it is in the States?
I'd ask you a question. Who the hell drinks Guinness outside of Ireland, and why do you? I mean, I don't even drink Guinness in England, because we only drink it when we come home. It's a rite of passage when you get home. But I have been told, I like the Guinness at the Harbour Bar. That's where I drink the most. That's where I go the most frequently. I don't drink the most. But I played with a past president of Port Stewart that said to me, Joe, the best Guinness in all of Ireland is at the Halfway House in Port Stewart. And I thought, oh, another one of these stories. But in the Halfway House there, go to the Halfway House at Port Stewart, and it was the best Guinness. Dominic McHugh told me that, who was past captain up there, and his father was president. So best Guinness, Port Stewart.
We've had a few people tell us that. The Halfway House.
At the Halfway House.
Yeah, that must be a renowned place to get the best Guinness. Interesting.
They would say. But no, I wouldn't drink Guinness anywhere else.
That's a good point. I think that's a good practice. That's a good practice. All right. Doctor, it's been an honor. Joe Mickelson, thank you.
You're making it complicated already. We're trying to keep it easy for you guys coming over here.
You gave me your card the other night, and I had a few Guinness in me. You had all the letters after all your name of all you've accomplished and studied. I didn't know what to call you, but I settled the doc.
A short level of knowledge and a long letter of degrees. That's all I've got.
Thank you so much for joining us. Honor and a privilege to have you on the podcast.
The pleasure's ours, and it's an absolute joy to see you coming over here, and it's a joy to see you enjoying yourself. And make sure you integrate with the locals, drink Guinness, and stay out of trouble.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
All right, welcome back to Explorations. We are at Lost and Found, a quaint, beautiful little coffee shop in the town of Port Stewart. I'm joined by Dave Limus. Did I say that right?
Linus. Yeah.
Linus.
Yep.
You are the owner, rioter, founder of Lost and Found,
yes.
A Port Stewart native, is that correct?
That's right, yeah, born and raised. I grew up here, had a slight dalliance, diversion to Dublin for 10 years, where I met my wife in Trinity College, and then I finally persuaded her to move back here, and I've been here for about the last 10 or 12 years, and we set up Lost and Found about a decade or so ago, first in Corrien, and then we found this beautiful spot here just around the corner from where I grew up. So yeah, feel very lucky to find this place.
We are golf course architecture experts. We could do fried egg guides on golf courses, but on the side of the building is McKenna Guides Best of Ireland 2020, 2021, 22, and 23. So we don't know much about McKenna Guides, but it has our stamp of approval as a coffee shop.
Awesome. Glad to hear it.
We're back for the second time today. Both food, coffee, the views out over Port Stewart and to Conny Donegal across.
So we got a beautiful view from Malin Head, which is the most western point of Ireland.
Yeah.
And then right the way across Donegal, Greencastle, and across to Musselburgh Temple. It's a pretty nice view.
We have had a day in Port Stewart, so we are far from experts. What was that persuasion process for your wife? Give us a pitch. What were you telling her to get back here? Because we are quite charmed here in our day. What was your persuasion?
Well, it was really all about the view, all about the sea. So she grew up in Wicklow, in the mountains. So she was a mountain girl. Wicklow is a beautiful place. So I had to do a lot of persuading. But yeah, the beach and the sea here is pretty spectacular. And it's a wild coast, the Causeway Coast. So you have to kind of live through a few storms in the winter. But around this kind of time, the weather starts to change and the sun comes out, and it's a pretty epic kind of coastline. You've got the Causeway Coast just up the road. And for me, the thing I loved the most here was I grew up in this sea, basically. I just loved swimming, surfing, just spending all my kind of, as much as I possibly could just here. I probably didn't appreciate it growing up.
Yep.
So actually coming back from living in a city for a decade and coming back here, it's a special place. It really is.
How is the surf culture more predominant than the golf culture?
Ooh, I mean, I think they're both very strong here. I mean, golf's always been a really strong culture here. So we've always had, you know, obviously Royal Portrush is a incredible course. And then, but we've, you know, the whole of the north is full of great links courses. So it's always been very popular. Surfing here over the last 10 or 15 years, particularly, has become very, very well known. I mean, Ireland and particularly the West Coast, from here, really all down the West Coast, Donegal, Sligo, incredible kind of surf. And it's become a world stage thing, you know, so it's people come here from all over the place to surf big waves in the middle of winter.
What was it like growing up here? When did you decide to jump into surfing? You know, is that just part of being a kid in Port Stewart? What?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was like we were a bit mad. Like we were the first early adopters, I think is what they call it.
Sure, okay.
/ mad people. We didn't really have proper wetsuits. We had these weird two-piece wetsuits. I used to water ski. There's a river nearby in Corinne, River Ban. We used to water ski, and then we bought surf magazines, and they were all from Hawaii and kind of these really warm water places. And we realized it was absolutely freezing in the sea. So we put on as many things as we could. We put like gloves on and literally woolen gloves and jumped in the sea. And there were a few guys that kind of were the first pioneers of this around here. There's a surf shop in Portrush called Trogs, a great surf shop. And the guy who owns and runs that, Andy Hill, was kind of, he was the pioneer. And we all kind of came to him, and he sold us surfboards and bodyboards and kind of basically taught us all how to surf. So it was like a bit of a, you know, pioneering hinterland thing where people were looking at us going, what are they doing? I mean, now I have loads of people surf here, but back in the day it was quite a new thing, a novel thing. My parents wondered what on earth I was doing. Were slightly worried I was going to drown out there, which, you know, they had, was fair enough justification.
Well, what's your perspective now, having been there in the earliest days, pioneers, as you say, and now you talk about the last 10 to 15 years, it seems all along this Causeway Coast, it's pretty significant.
I think it's brilliant. I mean, the people just love and utilize the sea now. And, you know, we've got loads of swimmers here. People go in and have their early morning dip. It's great for the mind, for the mental health. Like it's a real community thing now. So there's surfing, there's swimming, there's everyone's kayaking, paddleboarding, and all up and down the coast. So to see kids, adults using the sea, when I was growing up, it wasn't such a thing. Now it's a huge thing. It's a big lifestyle shift.
Right.
And people actually move here to kind of, I guess, because they want the lifestyle and they want to be a part of that. So that's nice.
It feels like in the States, they sell these buckets now for like $2,000, $10,000 to do these cold plunges. And here you can just go to the natural sea for a lot more cost.
You don't have to pay for that.
What's the coldest you've gone in?
I mean, it's at its kind of coldest point now, the sea. I think February, March is when it gets the coldest. So I am a bit of a wuss. I don't really go in, but my wife, Emily, is a bit more of a sea dipper.
Okay.
And she goes in a fair bit. It's absolutely freezing. I don't know what the actual temperature is, but it's, let's just say your extremities, your hands and your feet and your head are just, we talk about the brain freeze, you know, so it's real when you get your head under that.
Is the better surf though in the winter, you think?
Yeah. Okay. So that's the thing. So wetsuits are a lot better now. So you can wear a wetsuit and tolerate, you can go in and surf for hours now. Right. Whereas back in when we were doing it was like you could do about 20 minutes and then the numbness was kicking in. So yeah, I mean, it's cool, but it's doable, and the surf is the best in the winter. I wish it was the summer but the summer it just goes flat calm. Like,
is there any rivalry with Portrush? What's the better surfing spot or surf culture?
Be careful what I say.
Yeah. We watched the interclub matches yesterday.
Yeah,
they said between Port Stewart and Portrush. They said it's intense.
See, Portrush, they call themselves Port Magic, and that's a bone of contention, you know, with us Port Stewart locals. But I mean, honestly, there's great surf spots in both. I'm going to try a diplomatic answer.
Okay, all right.
I love surfing East Strand and Port Arthur, and I love surfing here because obviously this is my home break. So, but obviously Port Arthur's better.
Okay, all right. Talk a little bit more about the town, growing up in the town. Obviously the sea was a prominent part of your upbringing. How has that evolved? You talked about, is this become even more of a prominent vacation spot than when you were a child? How has it changed and how has it evolved?
Yeah. I mean, it was always a bit of a holiday spot, Port Arthur. But I think because of Northern Ireland and the troubles, politics, it was a domestic, very popular place. People would come and have their holidays in Port Arthur. Now it's a popular place for people from all over the world to come here. So definitely noticed it become much more busy. And there's a whole, I think, restaurant tourism scene that was never, it was very fledgling when we were kids. So it's brilliant to see. I mean, I think Northern Ireland tourism in general has exploded, but particularly the Causeway Coast and Port Arthur, Port Arthur, all around this area. There's an amazing kind of wealth of different places to go to now, restaurants, cafes, lots of outdoor things to do. Golf's been a huge thing. I mean, getting the British Open was sure a massive deal, and that really shone a light on this whole area. So it's changed a lot. I mean, it was very quiet here in the winters growing up. There was it was literally like a sleepy backwater, and now it's people come here all year round.
Year round.
Lots of people have homes here. They come and kind of stay up at the weekends, come to the cafes here. So it's nice. I kind of like it. I mean, as someone that's moved back here from living away somewhere else, I think there's so many pluses. I've got kids now. Got brilliant schools to go to. Yeah. It feels like a really nice place to raise people.
Do you have one recommendation for the golfers who come to town outside of the coffee shop, which we've already recommended with a bullet? Absolutely.
Thank
but
you.
Do you have someone who knows the town and outside of the a typical place, tourist a, trap, a restaurant, a pub, a cafe that you recommend?
To. So personally, and this is partly because I'm just lazy and I can walk to it. I love Harry's Shack. It's just literally on the beach.
Just
it's
had
a,
lunch
it's,
there.
It's a I've kind of great memories of being there. It's a lovely kind of family spot. I love fish. Mm-hmm. It's a great restaurant. Lear in Corrine is a brilliant spot as well. It's also a seafood restaurant. So they'd be my kind of go-to spots. But they're honestly, there's lots of different kind of places to kind of to go to. Our favorite thing to do is to drive down the coast and have a walk at White Park Bay. It's kind of our favorite little, it's a little place to go when the crowds are too much here.
Sure. All right, so what made you decide to open up a coffee shop? You have one in Coleraine, you have one here. It's really kind of seems to be thriving. Doesn't need our recommendation at all, but what made you decide to get into that?
I think first off, it was a love of coffee. So I got really interested in, they call it like third wave coffee, specialty coffee. It was like a whole scene and new coffee shops starting about 15, 20 years ago onwards, where a lot of West Coast Californian coffee shops really influenced us. And then Australia, Melbourne's like a huge kind of coffee scene. So we were kind of looking at this going, wow, this is interesting. And then we started trying the coffee and it was quite different. And we kind of went down the rabbit hole a bit with that. Then I love design. So I really, I'd always dreamt of kind of opening my own place, knew nothing about it. Met a couple of friends and the four of us just kind of went, well, we better shut up and stop talking about this and actually go for it. And we really did learn on the job. We didn't, none of us had very much hospitality experience, which we probably should have had.
Yeah.
None of us were chefs. But, and I think the also the other part of us, we just really wanted to open up a place in our, where I was from. You know, I kind of had lived, as I say, 10 years in the city and loved that and immersed myself in all of that, but wanted to come home and do something back home. So that was the, I think, those were the main kind of drivers, the community aspect, this whole coffee scene that was developing, and then just finding spots here. Loved being back in the North Coast, to be honest. It's definitely in the bones.
Yeah, you can tell you have a design background. Every little detail here, like we went out the first time, like the marveling at the branding. It's really, really good.
Oh,
good spot, in addition to the views and amazing.
I think that was one of the things I was most excited about when we did those West Coast adventures. It was seeing like some really amazing cafes and restaurants that had these brands that were you really emotionally bought into. You're like, oh, I really like that. And
right.
That was something that definitely inspired us and we wanted to try and emulate as best we could, but put a bit more of a local Irish stamp on it.
Yeah, we have two Californians in our group too. Yes, discerning coffee,
that's right,
snobs,
San Francisco,
and they pass the test with them. So
elitists. Yes.
Last but not least, my obnoxious podcast co-host, always has a sort of a incredulous question about this when he travels, usually internationally. Why does the coffee shop not open until 9 a.m.? This is American sort of culture shock. We were looking for coffee at 6 or 7.
It's true. Everything's open.
He's sort of incredulous. Why is it 9 a.m.? Is it just the crowd? Is that the business?
It's trying to persuade people to come and open it up. I think it's part pragmatism.
Okay.
And this part, I think people just, we do get up a little bit. Maybe, you know, I know American culture is definitely like, you're up at 6.
Right.
And you're absolutely gunning for it. We just sleep a little bit longer here, and then, yeah. I mean, in the summer, people are—they want us to open up here a lot earlier. We sometimes have people knocking aggressively at the door, going, "I need my coffee." So maybe that's something we need to look into. No. But yeah, for now, we're getting that little extra hour sleep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you're right. I don't know. I think I get up a lot earlier now, but that's mainly because my kids get up.
Sure.
9 a.m. used to be pretty difficult to make. Now it would be pretty easy.
Well, Dave, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. We loved our time in Port Stewart. Really wanted to talk to a local voice, kind of add some expertise. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Absolute pleasure, and lovely to meet you guys. And it's been a blast.
Again, that's Lost and Found Coffee Shop in Port Stewart. Fabulous place to come. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.